like to tell you about, I'm going to call these two men Jeff and Jim, no particular reason, then that other one needs a, everybody needs a name, right? So, Jeff, I'll describe Jeff first. Jeff was a kind, I would say thankful person. You know, when needing something, he was one the one that would say, please, would you help me with this if he needed help? When he was given or on the receiving end of something, he was thank you. And Jeff, I'd say he was just a great person to be around. His cheerful thankfulness for even your existence made the day brighter. I just seemed like he was glad to meet you. And strangely enough, one thing about Jeff was that most of the people in his life seemed to be helpful and courteous people. So that was Jeff. Now I want to ask you some questions to remember how he was. Now, Jim, let's just say that Jim leaned more towards the grumpy and demanding side of life, if you know what I mean by that. He knew his rights, and he intended to have them and to have them respected. Of course, I would say Jim was just as blessed by the helpful and courteous people, but he didn't really see any need to be continually expressing this because, after all, they could know that he appreciated it. Why bother saying it? Now, the other problem Jim had in his life, it just seemed like, how shall I say this, things weren't like they used to have been. People just weren't all that helpful and all that courteous. So we won't go further into Jeff and Jim's life at the moment much, but I'd like to ask you a question. When they called customer service, who do you think which one got the best service, would you guess, just off your life experience? Okay. Why would you say Jeff got better customer service than Jim?
The person on the other end felt like helping.
Felt like helping them, okay. Which one do you think felt better at the end of the day? I'd probably say I've tried both already too much, to my shame. Probably, would you say Jeff? You think so? Probably be inclined. And then also, maybe most important, which one do you think had the most opportunity to leave a testimony for Christ? We probably know that answer too, don't we? So in a way, this is maybe somewhat a continuation of my message on thankfulness some weeks ago. It's maybe a little bit aspect. Generally, when I think of thankfulness, I think of thanking God. I want to focus on other people, and I just titled this To Give Roses, Applied Gratitude in Everyday Life is, I guess, a broader description. So, To Give Roses, Applied Gratitude in Everyday Life. And it's something I've been trying to work on in my life. I don't know that I had better grade myself on it. Maybe it'd be good if those I relate to would. So, I guess if you feel like giving me a report card and it has an F on it, at least I know I got some more work to get started, but yeah, you're welcome to. So I just think there's a number of reasons this has probably been on my mind. Just yesterday, I found out of a family I have known somewhat for a while that the mother passed away. Of course, we know what Jerry went through recently, and then Sarah Doyle not so long ago. I was just thinking, you know, it seems there's just a lot of death, a lot of opportunities. Just thinking of Sarah, for instance. She was always so nice and friendly, and I don't know, I thought sometimes she must dread seeing me come to the bank, because we usually do deposits about once a week, and we could have this mighty stack of scrawly checks that her machine just absolutely refused to read. And for some reason, I've never been sure why this was, but it seemed the computers didn't like Sarah as well as some other people in that office, and she could just struggle and struggle, and I don't think it was her fault, but... And I don't know, looking back, did I tell her thank you for her hard effort as much as I should have? Or did I let the long delay get... I had other things to do. Anyway, that's just some of the build-up thoughts. And again, like I said, it's something I definitely want to keep growing in. Been trying to focus on it, but again, I'm not sure how well I'm doing. I had a friend, and I think I shared this before. He'd been in a community teaching school, and he had left this community, his life moved on. 30 years later, he had the chance to go back, and it was in a western province where they had these big mountains. And he was did he talk to me while out there soon after he came home? And he said, you know, he said, it's interesting. He said, the people changed an awful lot, but he said, the mountains didn't. But he said, as I was thinking about that, he said, the people are eternal and the mountains aren't. And that's just stuck with me how, you know, we tend to focus on things that seemingly don't change. And sometimes we forget the small things that change on an everyday basis. And those changes in 30 years add up to a lot. So here's a couple questions just that I want to put to myself, and I'll invite you to do the same to yourself. You know, as people change, we know we all change, are the ones that I relate with on an everyday basis especially better or worse because of their association or relationship with me? Are the people I relate to on an everyday basis better or worse because they relate to me? And we could take that on a broad scale. I was just thinking, I mean, maybe one challenge for me is somebody that started a business. Are the ones that I work with, do they do better financially because they work with me, or worse than if they were doing their own business? Just that was a random thought that came to me. Or at least less stress if it's not money. Do they have less stress? And we could take that into all aspects of life. Are my children more secure because they have me for their dad, or would they be more secure if I wasn't here? We could go on and on. But are the people that I relate with on an everyday basis better or worse because of that relationship? Second, or the next question, are your relationships such that if the temporal part of any person you know would end today, would all be well in your relationship with them? So I'm just basically saying, if anybody that you relate with on a regular basis again were to pass away, there's always the regret of having lost a friend or family, whatever. But is your relationship such that it would just be that sorrow? Would there be the sorrow of knowing that you didn't fully utilize yourself in that relationship? Here's a statement that somebody had lost a very close family member made that was repeated to me. And the statement was, you don't know what you have till you lose it, in talking about that relationship. You don't know what you have till you lose it. Or maybe at least till we're threatened with its loss. I'm not sure. That sometimes wakes us up too. I'm not saying we absolutely. But that brought up the next question is, must it be that way? Must it be that way? To me, it seems sort of sad that I would have to lose my wife or my daughters to know that what valuable possession I have in that, wouldn't it? Does it have to be that way? And then it brings up a question Hope brought up in men's Sunday school class some time ago. I thought I'd throw this one in the mix. I think I'm not misquoting you, Hope, but it was, why don't you give your children more public commendation? Why don't we encourage your children more, is how I understood you. And so let's just throw that one in there too. Just different things, questions that have been running through my mind. I don't know if I have great answers for these, but I have some thoughts, and then you can take it further. Here's one that I've noticed is, or maybe you don't have this. Have you ever thought of telling somebody you did a good job, or that was wonderful, or I really enjoyed it, and then you thought about it for 30 seconds too long, and you got yourself talked out of it? Have you ever done that? Recently, somebody told me this wasn't, I don't know if this involved commendation or not, but recently, a lady I know well said something to me about, she said, I was going to give this other girl, a lady, a hug, and I just didn't. And now I don't know why I didn't. And, you know, it's funny, some things that are spontaneous, if you just do it, there's a blessing in it, and you start thinking about it, and somehow we talk ourselves out of it. And it's a pretty foolish process for me. I don't know how it is for you. But what is it that makes us self-conscious or sheepish when giving praise or commendation? Why do you feel goofy doing it, or don't you? Now, if you're flattering, maybe you should feel goofy. I'm not saying that. But if it's actually, that actually was a good meal, what's goofy about saying that that was a good meal? If they actually did a good job mowing the yard, what's silly about saying thanks for mowing the yard? There's nothing. It's just something weird. Like I said, if it's flattery, that's one thing. But when it's sincerely deserved and sincerely given, why any hesitancy? I would suggest, before I go deeper into this, maybe we overanalyze. Maybe we should be, I would be careful here because I want to allow room for different personality types and all that. But I wondered if in this subject, at least, maybe we just all need a little bit more spontaneity. Would it hurt us? Would it harm? Would it harm us, maybe, is a better question. Who would it harm? I realize, of course, that part of this subject, our reticence in giving commendation, is, of course, part of early training and experience. And that varies from home to home, from community to community, from person to person. You know, if you grew up in a very unexpressive home or community, I would say it's going to take genuine effort to be different, won't it? You're going to have to step outside of your comfort zone because, after all, I just wasn't brung up this way, like one person said. Yeah, so you can still choose. And I might touch on that a little bit later on. Personality types also play a role. And I don't want to, again, it's not that I feel some personality types, how should I say this? They play a role, but I'm not here to lift one up above another. In fact, believe it or not, I sometimes look at the quiet personality types and think how much easier life they must have than some of us that go crashing through life, because we know we made a problem till we crash into it. But anyways, so in what I'm saying through this message, I'm not trying to promote to change your personality at all. That's not what I'm after. I'm not trying to say that you need to be an effusive person. In fact, I would just say this. I would say more of a quiet personality person, if they come and encourage, have some words of encouragement or just an action of encouragement, they are just as encouraging and possibly more encouraging than the person that's just continually gushing this fountain of encouraging words, right? You know what I mean? So if someone hardly ever says something and they come and encourage you, wow, you take notice, right? Whereas if this fellow's just always running his mouth, it's sort of like, well, did he really mean that this time, or was that just something free for the taking? In this encouragement business, it seems to me that maybe there's a lot more emphasis on it, and it's maybe a popular subject in our culture today. And I don't want to focus on it for that reason. I would say let's just forget about culture and what's popular in general society as the way to deal with things. Because, you know, that pendulum, society's norms, if you will, is a pendulum that's always swinging. Maybe some years ago, they were very reticent. Now they're all gushy. So let's as Christians see, how can we be consistent? How can we be what God wants us to be? What does the Bible say? How should I be consistent in this area in my Christian life? So I have a number of verses. I've tried to put them, for the most part, in order. So if you want to turn to them, that's great. If not, that's fine too. But the first one is Job chapter 4, verse 3. Job chapter 4, verse 3. For some reason, I often think of all the nasty things Job's friends said about him. Here they actually said something really, really nice. At least, if any of you were to say this about me, I think it would be encouraging. Hopefully it wouldn't make me proud, but I thought it was pretty good. Job chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. One of Job's friends says this. Behold, thou, Job, you have hast instructed many, and hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. Wow, that's just a pretty nice thing to say about Job, wasn't it? And he goes on and deduces some contorted things from it, but at the same time, he got that part nice. Some of this is again used in Isaiah 35. I could have really read all the chapter of Isaiah 35, but just verses 3 and 4 there again. The expression almost seems borrowed from Job's friend here, but here it's put into command form. He says, strengthen ye the weak hands, confirm the feeble knees, say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with recompense. He will come and save you. So we're actually commanded to strengthen the weak hands. And I don't know what better way to strengthen weak hands than to be an encouraging person, right? Whether it's word, action, or just influence. Strengthen them. Again, we have, this won't be in order, so just you don't need to turn to this one, but Hebrews 12, verse 12 and 13, almost a repeat. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. And when I think of that, lift up the hands, you know, I don't know, I've hiked and stuff sometimes where I felt pretty tired, but I just have this mental image of a person just totally just, nothing left. I mean, they're just one step away from blah. And so you come along beside them, put your arm around them, lift them up. You lift them up. You get them going again. You give them part of your strength to keep going. So in studying this subject, I don't know that we have a lot of commands to actually go and commend people, encourage people per se. There's some. But the biggest one, I believe, is the example of Christ, of Paul and the other New Testament writers. And some of this takes some research, and I didn't get as much done as I wanted. But you think of different times where Christ, remember the widow that put in her two mites. What did he say? She has put in more than them all. Isn't that a rather encouraging statement to know that Christ said that? Whether she heard it, I have no idea. But that was one thing he said. Just different times his disciples, you know, Peter, there one time he encouraged him. And we could keep going. I probably focus more on the Paul's writings. He does this so regularly, it's almost amazing. So here's where I have some in order. Romans 1, verse 8 through 12. I'd like to read those verses. Romans 1, verse 8 through 12. I don't know what you would say if Ernie was writing a letter and he would put this in about the church here, let's just say for, but let's notice Paul, he almost seems gushy compared to some of us. Listen to this. Romans 8 verse 1. First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers, making requests if by any means now at length I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. For I long to see you, that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end that ye may establish. That is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith both of you and of me. And if you look up that word, the last verse there, verse 12, that I may be comforted, it means that I may be consoled, that I may be encouraged, that I may be strengthened, that I may be lifted up. Wow. That's pretty generous, isn't it? I hope if somebody said that about me, it would at least partially be true, but do we live that way? Anyway, going on, I have a whole list of references. I don't think we'll take time for them. But 1 Corinthians 1, verse 4. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 11. Ephesians 1, verse 15. Philippians 1, verse 3. Colossians 1, verse 3. 1 Thessalonians 1, verse 2. 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 3. 2 Timothy verse 1, chapter 1, verse 2 and 3. Philippians chapter, Philemon chapter 1, verse 4. 2 John chapter 1, verse 4. And 3 John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. Do you know what's said there? Almost all those verses use some of the same words that I thank God for you and I rejoice in you. That's a lot of verses, isn't it? A lot of them. And if that's not a command by example, I don't know what would be. Let me just read Ephesians chapter 1, verse 15 through 17 for you. That's one of the ones I mentioned. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 15. Wherefore I also, after I heard of your faith in the Lord Jesus and love unto all the saints, cease not to give thanks for you, making mention of you in my prayers, that the God of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of glory, may give unto you the spirit of wisdom and a revelation in the knowledge of him. Cease not to give thanks for you. I've wondered already, and it's not that I feel we are having struggles here necessarily, but do you think if each one of us would cease not to give thanks for everybody else in church at least once a week, do you think it would improve church life? Do you think if all people that use the same name on their door that we do you think there'd be less church splits if they all did that? Just some questions for you to think about. Now, I don't know if you were keeping track. I did skip two of Paul's writings, was 1 Timothy and Titus. He doesn't really have that rejoicing part are the thankful part, but he has an endearing term for them, actually. He calls them my own son. My own son. So again, encouragement. Jude, when in the people that Jude was writing to, he called them beloved. Beloved. That's just fascinated me how many times this is just over and over. Now I want to dig into some verses just a little bit more. I want to read 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 25 and 26. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 25. Paul says that there should be no schisms or gaps in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. You know, to me that speaks of such a close unity that it doesn't matter what's happening in your life, I need to associate with it. I need to be the encouragement, the strength that you need for that time. If you're skipping with joy, it doesn't say I have to jump necessarily with you, but I need to be joyful. If you're sorrowful, I need to join you in that. Titus 1 verse 9 says this, and this was given to Titus as a church leader, but I think it goes for everyone. Hold fast the faithful word as hath been taught. Oh, excuse me, now he's actually talking about ordaining somebody for the bishop's office. He says this person needs to be holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers. So if Jason called you up and said, hey, I would like to meet you for lunch today so that I could exhort you, would you have warm, cozy feelings or feelings of fear? Probably being Jason, y'all would have all warm, cozy feelings. Maybe if it'd be me, you'd feel different. I don't know. Hope not. That word exhort, I don't know what it means to you. That's why I asked. What does it mean to you? Does anybody tell me, just don't look at a dictionary or anything, what's exhort mean in your book? Okay. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I looked exhort up in Strong's just to see where this went. And it means, primarily it means to call someone near and then to invite them to come near and then to console or comfort them. So that just, I mean, there's other words in Strong's too, but to me that was just fascinating. Is to an invitation to come for consolation or comfort. So if anybody calls you up and says, I want to exhort you, let's hope that you and they both know what the word means and you'll be good to go, right? It made me think of this, and I think it's something I can easily fail, and I'm pretty sure I wouldn't say this if I thought the person would care, but not so long ago here, I told somebody, hey, let's meet for lunch. And so we're sitting there making chit-chat, and after a while he goes, he says, Joe, I'm not good at beating around the bush. What do you want? And I felt a little bad because I really was just, I didn't have nothing more than that, really. I mean, I knew he was facing some decision stuff. I wanted to tell him I was praying for him, but that was about it for that meeting. And I guess that's shame on me for having been the kind of person that made him worry. But, you know, I think it should be normal. It should be healthy, whatever format you use in your life to exhort people then. You know, if I think of exhortation primarily as a thing of correction or rebuke, something has gone off the track, right? Something's gone awry. And I'm not saying we avoid those, but I do suggest that maybe we need to be doing more of this so that there's not so much a fear of the other. I think it would help. Hebrews 3, verse 13 says this, but exhort, same word, same Greek word, one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. That verse sort of scares me. It means that potentially if one of you were to walk away from truth and to pursue sin in your life, he's saying that possibly it's because I failed in exhorting you daily. And again, notice that this verse is a command. It's not really given as an option. Do it when you have time or when you feel like it. But exhort one another daily while it is called today. May I say this? Gratefulness without any expression is merely a good feeling hoarded to myself, isn't it? Or is it something more? Gratefulness without any expression is merely a good feeling hoarded to myself. And what good does it do there? If I don't, at least maybe I can count my blessings before God, but I would suggest that there's many times it could go further. So first of all, before I go into how it can be expressed, I want to look in three things we should do when we express gratitude. The first one is be honest. And some of these overlap very closely, but be honest. What would you say is the difference between grateful commendation and flattery? Anybody want to tell me how would you describe that difference? Go ahead, Jason. Truth mixed in for sure. At the same time, it probably goes a little overboard that way. And then also the thing, maybe the word I would use for what you said, Verton, is manipulation. I'm trying to speak something good about you to you in an effort to get you to be what I want you to be for me. Or could you follow that spiel? Anyways, I won't try to repeat it to you. One is sincere and honest. Encouragement. The other is hyped up words spouted in an effort to get results that I want. You know, for example, and what I mean in being honest, I won't spend a lot of time on this, but don't tell somebody that it was wonderful if it wasn't. You know, if I let's say I'm at Bible school and I decide to help the youth there play volleyball, and a fellow would come to my office a while later and say, "Woo, that was a wonderful spike." Flattery. It's not true. Maybe at best it was successful because somebody else on the other side was messing up, but you know. So I'm just saying, keep it true, because it's pretty easy to tell when you shift into flattery if the other person really wants to know. Now, sometimes if we're looking for it, we eat up some things we shouldn't. You know, honesty, even if it was a fail, leads to true encouragement and success. And I guess just to use that same analogy, if somebody says good try, to me that's much more encouraging than if they say wonderful spike when it wasn't flat. Not true, right? Because it leaves that open, that their honesty. So the next time they tell me something, I'm more inclined to believe them because they were accurate in what they were saying rather than off on the left somewhere. Okay, the second point in how to do it is be sincere. And maybe there's not a lot between sincerity and honesty, but one thing I have seen done, and I think shouldn't be done, is when somebody comes to you and they are almost seems like they're quickly trying to find something good to say about you before they correct you, right? You ever had that happen? I'd say just skip it. You'd be better off saving that for another trip to the bank some other day. If you came to correct, and maybe it's necessary, I'm not saying to avoid correction, that's not the point of this message. I'm just saying if you're coming to correct, don't try to invent some encouraging things to say about the person before you say what you have to say, because it's going to sound false. They'd probably rather just take the load of shot and keep trying to sort through it than just having to sort through a bunch of salt and pepper mixed up together. And insincerity, also have a thought here on habitual. And this one I struggle with a bit. I think it's good to be habitually thankful, right? But I have also met people that are habitually saying thank you or something, and it's a psychological or false. Do you know what I mean by that? They're not really thinking about the words they're speaking. It's just, "Oh, thank you." Rather than, you know, and so I'm all for habitual thankfulness. But I'm not necessarily, don't think it'll be that much good commendation if it's just habitual, psychological, or habit without any thought or appreciation connected. Okay, the third point in encouragement is give correction when needed. Maybe that sounds weird. But if I have the assurance that you will speak to me about a need that you sense in my life, your encouragement actually means more to me, right? If the only time you speak to me, and maybe you're going to say I'm weird or I don't know. But honestly, The encouragement that means the most, the people that can encourage me the most are the ones that will tell me what I need to hear at the moment. If this person is always encouraging me and never tells me that, Joe, you have a need here, I soon become a little, I know my own needs to some extent at least, and that person becomes a little suspect in my mind. What brownie points are they trying to get with me? Maybe you say I'm too whatever, but I really think there's some truth in that for myself. Let's just say it this way. It brings security. Correction brings security, which makes encouragement more worthwhile. If I know, you know that I know I have a need of correction and you don't give it, it undermines the security that should be in that relationship. Okay, enough on those. There could be a lot more said. I'll just stop. Okay, so how should we express gratitude? Encouragement. I have a four ways. And again, they overlap, and I think they flow. I tried to put them in order that they probably start most times. In thought, in word, in action, in prayer. Now, I don't know. In prayer should maybe sort of be superimposed on top of them all rather than at the bottom, but can't really do that. So we'll look at them in that order. In thought. Encouragement in thought. Do I remember? Do I consider the help that others are to me? Do I recall the sacrifices that they have made to be able to bless me? Do I try to find ways to bless them or at least ways to let them know that I appreciate their effort? So in thought, how much thought do you put into being an encouraging person or being a thankful person for the people that are in your life? You know, it makes me think of one writer. He said that when you give gifts, I think this was said, you can give two kinds of gifts. You can either give the thoughtful or the expensive. And I would say, most of us aren't millionaires, and really, an expensive gift sometimes makes you feel goofy, if you know what I mean. So a thoughtful gift is probably the way for a Christian to go, wouldn't you say? Thoughtful. What fills the need? Know the person well enough to know what fills the need, and I just like that. Do you put thought into it, being a grateful and encouraging person to people? Do you remember what people have done for you, at least to some extent? Do you realize that the blessing they were to you probably caused them to sacrifice some things? Do you then try to find a way in your thoughts to bless them or at least to encourage them? So to me, that flows right over in word. And again, I would like to put a sign out. I'm not talking about gushiness, but a heartfelt thank you. Or that helped me. Or that made something clear to me. You know, probably, and I don't share this because I felt like I did such a good job, but I will tell you two times that I was probably most encouraged by someone. Incidentally, come to think of it, just standing here thinking about those two times, they're both ladies. One was about a 90-year-old lady, and the other one was a young lady. Maybe their ladies do better on this, so maybe I should just be talking to you fellows, I don't know. But I'll just tell you, and that was both times in sharing and preaching. And the 90-year-old lady said, and I felt really stupid almost that she would dare say this, but I took it as just encouragement. She said that you have explained some things that I've wondered about all my life. And I was like, whew, I sure hope I explained them right. But anyway, it's just still, that was so encouraging to think that somebody her age was telling somebody my age that was a help to me. That was tremendously encouraging to keep trying. And the other one, the younger lady, she said something to this effect that you taught me how to think, and I don't know. I think she was willing to think, and maybe God used me as a small step in that. But still, it was just tremendously encouraging to see somebody that was willing to stop their life, think about somebody else's train of thoughts, and say, yes, that helped me at least further my own thoughts. And you know, that's just small illustrations, but in word. It wasn't much, and I don't know. Don't know of either of them super well. I don't know. Neither one was just the floppy, gushy type person exactly. You know, back to this thing. If you thought it, if you felt it, do not be sheepish about expressing it. It may be that the person needs, it may be the very thing the person needs to keep their nose above the waves in whatever they're facing. You know, even on their best days, no one was damaged by knowing that they were used to bless someone else. And I guess I would like to not overemphasize this, but encourage us to think about this is so many times in life, there's sometimes big, huge things in people's lives that most of the world knows about, right? And we know that that person needs encouragement. That's great. But I would suggest that most times when people are most in danger of failing spiritually or whatever, it's in the details that not everybody knows. And you may know nothing about it, but you may be God's instrument, tool of the art, to encourage somebody to take that next step of faith when they're almost finding it impossible. So don't neglect it. Remember, but exhort one another daily. Anyway, going on, in action. In action, let's not stop with thoughts and words, but let's take it on to action, especially words without actions are sort of hollow in my book, even though I think we can't, let's not avoid the words. When I started thinking about how to be an encouragement or to be grateful in action, it brings up such a multitude of possibilities that I found it even difficult to pick a couple good examples because it's endless. I don't know what all your opportunities are. Some are more universal. Others are very specific to certain people. So I broke it down into mainly three. Is sharing. One way to be encouraging and thankful to others is through sharing. You know, whether it's taking time, keeping confidences, sharing work, sharing food, sharing hobbies, or sharing money. Those are all ways that we encourage each other, right? And show appreciation that this person is in your life. And I'll let you break that down further for yourself. The second one I have is caring. Caring. And I think maybe, I'll say this carefully, I really appreciate how we share here, I would say. And I'm not saying that we have a deficit on the caring, but I would say probably overall caring is more difficult than sharing. Would that be fair? And why? The reason I say that is caring actually means that to some degree I have to get involved in a person's life more than I do to share. I can hand you $100 or even $1,000 and go my way, and it didn't really, more than gathering it, that was the main. Whereas caring is, sometimes it's in silence. I wonder if that's where Job's friends failed. They shared, but they didn't care, huh? They didn't sit there silently. Why not let Job, well, maybe Job did break the silence, but then they started talking. And that, anyway. You know, caring, whether in silence, in listening. Maybe there is a time to ask questions. But do you really care? That makes me think of an old saying, and I don't know, some of these just come to my mind, but I don't care how much you know until I know how much you care, right? A classic example of that. Okay, the last one is closely tied into caring. Maybe I shouldn't have split it, but then bearing. Rather than just sitting there silently, be willing to be part of the solution. If this person has a need, if the person is struggling, have a willingness to help carry the load of care, of stress, in any way that they is allowable, that they will allow you to, or that is possible. Just some things that came to my mind. Again, I don't want to drag these out. Now, there is one thing I would like to maybe use to start a discussion, if nothing else. You know, Apostle Paul, when he was writing about marriage and he thought it was better not to get married, he said this. He said, I speak this by permission and not a commandment. I was wondering if I could speak by permission and not commandment here a little bit. I don't want to get too far from. I know there's not exactly any Bible verses on this. I imagine you could go find some and twist some, but I'd rather just tell you what I think than do that. And I think some do quite well, and I think some do struggle with this. But one way in encouragement, in sharing, is think something that's neglected in at least some families and circles is physical touch. Maybe you think that's a funny one to pull out of the bag. I don't know. But I think, personally, I think that far too often this is neglected as not necessary or avoided as embarrassing. And I would say don't shy away from it. And I'll just, my dad, my parents grew up in an old order Mennonite setting. And so my dad, I think, improved by, I don't know, 300 to 500% probably over his dad on this area. But I can still probably count. Well, I only remember about 2 to 3 times that Dad touched me in commendation growing up. Now, I'm sure he held me as a boy and stuff, and I'm not running Dad down at all. We talked, it's all good. I'm just telling you, if I would have a regret from my childhood, it's not that is that that was so uncommon, right? A small baby, we're told that you can provide a baby with everything it needs, but if you withhold physical touch, that baby won't develop as one that's snuggled and held. And I don't think it stops with babyhood, if I should say it that way. And when I said touch, I'm talking, yes, of course, Dad touched me in correction. And I think it's a little bit the same problem that some preachers have is when they call and say they want to meet and you... That's because too often we do something good for correction and not otherwise. So that's, I'm talking now about touch outside of correction. You know, as most good and necessary things, of course I realize and want to acknowledge that touch can be misused, misdirected, and misapplied. We must, of course, for example, follow God's guidance and use some common sense in relation to purity. Also, I'm not trying to suggest that gratitude causes me to drape myself over my friends, so to speak, if you know what I mean by that. Maybe a good illustration of what I mean is with being blessed with a house full of little girls, you know, when they really love somebody, it's just flopping all over them. And, you know, so as you get a little older, there's a right way to express gratitude through touch, and it probably isn't through floppiness or, like I said, drapery. But I would like to say, keep touch appropriate for the age, gender, and relationship involved. But again, I would say don't avoid it. Do it. You know, as parents, let's spend time holding our small children. I said small. I wasn't sure if I should put that in there or not. Of course, as they grow and mature, most of the time they will demand some more personal space, I think. It's not really that parents generally have to give it. But at the same time, give it. I mean, of course. But, you know, I would also like to say in this that a hug or a pat should never be weird or unusual. That's my philosophy. And I told you I speak this by permission, not commandment. So you take it and chew it. And if you process it differently, that's up to you. I really hope that it doesn't have to be that way anyway. In relationships, at home or abroad, be respectful, be conscientious, but don't be avoiding. I wonder if in some degree maybe enters into this subject too, is that we have to be all things to all men. The touchy-feelies and the touch-me-nots. And I had to think of two times that this can really be awkward if we're not used to it. Like I told you, I didn't grow up in a touchy-feely family, even though I think I'm a little bit more that kind of person than some. And we were at a funeral of a close neighbor's mother. And so we come through the line there, and she wanted to hug me. And I'd never done this before. I didn't know how to do it. And it was weird and awful and unusual. And anyways, just like I said, the more you thought about it, the worse it got too. And I've often felt like she probably felt like she hugged some for idiotic tree or something that night, and I was sure no comfort to her. And if she was going to do it, I might as well at least find an appropriate way to do it and move on with my life, I guess is my thought. If you disagree, that's fine. I was going to suggest that somebody wiser than me has a disposition on the proper place of touch in relationships here after I get done. Maybe that's something for the Sunday evening committee, since I don't want to do it. But that was one case, and I don't know. You disagree, but I have personally found huge things made out of improper touch and stuff. And I'll just say this. In my personal experience, I think I have faced that battle as real as anyone. But to give somebody what I'm going to call a side hug or something in a case like that, to me, causes a lot less stress for everybody and probably does more for them than what I gain by trying to feel like I'm some for aloof person. And that, for me at least, it's not really a struggle. I don't want to say that for others. And I would question whether we're not making too big of a thing out of some things like that. Over the years, I've found it, a blessing to do that for my mother-in-law and sisters-in-law and such. And I guess I just have a hard time seeing it as a problem. Again, you're welcome to correct or say what you think. At the same time, I also have, now this is a young lady that's closely related to me. I'm not going to tell you who. But she told me that she's not a touchy-feely person. So She does a lot for me some days, but I just don't do anything for her down that line because I figure that's what she wants. So to me, that's all things to all men. And so it's complicated, and I don't want to overcomplicate it, but I'd like to stir some conversation and thought, if nothing else. So, okay, moving on. The last thing I had is in prayer. Like I said, really in prayer should probably begin with my thoughts, continue as I speak, and continue through my actions. But in prayer, how do I encourage, give commendation in prayer? As I read over almost, I didn't quite do them all, I don't think, but most of the New Testament books in preparing for this message, just seeing the introduction and stuff, I was reminded or struck again with what prayer lists some of these people must have had. Think about it. Let me just read Philippians 1, verse 3 and 4. Philippians 1, verse 3 and 4 says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, for you all making requests with joy. I don't know. That sounds like a lot swinging there, Paul. Did you actually keep that up? I should just read it again. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around all those words. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making requests with joy. You know, while I try to have a regular prayer time, I guess I won't tell you how often, where I cover every single person that attends this church on a regular basis, I still can't quite say what Paul was saying here, for sure not. And maybe you say that's a pastor's job, I don't know. It probably is. At the same time, I would also suggest to you, would it harm any of you if you did the same? And I don't know. I wish I should do it more. When I read that verse, I feel very inadequate. Another thing about the one of encouragement in prayer is maybe some of you felt daunted by some of the suggestions that I gave, or felt that your training and your personality just can't express the gratitude that I'm saying you should. Well, then maybe the prayer one is especially for you, right? If you can't express gratitude or encouragement in any other way, just spend time praying and let it with God. I'm okay with that. But I would say you better get pretty heavy on the prayer then, for sure, if you're going to skip the rest. You know, take all that stored up, unexpressed gratefulness and dump it out before God and see if the results surprise you. Remember, I told you that if gratefulness is unexpressed, it's just a feel good, right? So make sure you express it at least to God. I love this little poem. I said a prayer for you today. I said a prayer for you today, and I know God must have heard. I felt the answer in my heart, although he spoke no word. I didn't ask for wealth or fame. I knew you wouldn't mind. I asked him to send treasures of a far more lasting kind. I ask that he'd be near you at the start of each new day to grant you health and blessings and friends to share your way. I ask for happiness for you in all things great and small, but it was for his loving care I prayed the most of all. So pray that for me, please. I'd be honored. Okay, one last thing I want to touch on briefly here in this thing of encouragement sharing. I think maybe I bit off more than I could chew. I started working on this subject of personality channeling, is what I'm going to call it at this point. And I thought I was going to work to it this Sunday, and I shelved it. I'm not sure if I ever pull that back off the shelf or not. It looks sort of big. But I've noticed something a bit odd, and I would just like to say this to plant seeds for the smarter people here. Maybe they could do this one for me. But why is it that the very thing that may attract us to a person, a group, or shall I say even a church, often ends up being the very thing that irks us about that person, group, or church? Do you follow what I'm saying? I've seen this over and over again. It's maybe, I asked a young man recently, I said I was trying to explain my concept to him, and it's probably easiest to see it in marriage. So I started there. He's like, "Whoa, I don't want to hear nothing about this." It's like, I think you did, but anyways, we'll let that with him. But it is easier to see there. And I'll just use that again. Not it happens otherwise, but I see it a lot in marriages, is where, let's say, just to do something different, let's say you have this fellow that's sort of reserved, maybe a bit shy even, And he sees this vivacious young lady that just enjoys life and always has something to say. And he's like, ooh, that's sort of cool. I sort of like that. And yeah, he sort of gets attracted. And finally, even Mr. Shy gets his courage worked up. And he takes her out for a date, if she's willing at least. And anyway, this seems like this is great. And he, this is great, awesome. And they get married in the first 5, 10 years are great, awesome, wonderful, fantastic. But somewhere in there, he starts getting a little bit embarrassed about how she just spouts whatever she thinks. And now you wouldn't have to say everything about us. I mean, calm it down just a bit. And you follow what I'm saying? And it can work the other way. It can work different ways. That's just, since I'm not going to spend all day giving you illustrations, I'll let you with that one. But again, let me ask a question. Why is it that the very thing that it may attract us to a person, group, or church often ends up being the very thing that irks us about that given person, group, or church? Maybe I will give you one more. Let's do this on the church level. I've seen many people, not just in this community, but in communities where there's Mennonite churches, and I've had the privilege of interacting with people from that didn't grow up in our churches. They come, and one of the things they love about our churches is our families. Yet at the same time, our stand on divorce and remarriage is one of the biggest problems for them to accept. And yet, so in that way, the very thing they like the most is the very thing they don't like, right? Because it's connected, trust me. Anyway, enough on that. So to finish up, as people change, are the ones I relate to on a daily basis changed for better or for the worse because of my association with me? So whether it's going to the bank or whether it's going home and going to sleep for the night, are they ahead or behind? Are your relationships such that if the temporal part, if the body of any of the persons you relate to closely today would die, would all be well in your relationship with that person? You don't know what you have till you lose it. You know, that phrase almost haunts me. You don't know what you have till you lose it. And I'm afraid that's too true of Joe. Will that be true of you? And I used this song probably a year and a half ago, but it's a song I learned in school, so it sticks in my memory, and I'll just use it again. Wonderful things of folks are said when they have passed away. Roses adorn the narrow bed over the sleeping clay. The course is give them the roses while they live, trying to cheer them on. Useless the flowers that you give after the soul is gone. The next two verses are, praises are heard not by the dead, roses they cannot see. Let us not wait till souls have fled, generous friends to be. Faults are forgiven when folks lie cold in the narrow bed. Let us forgive them ere they die. Now should the words be said. Give them the roses while they live, trying to cheer them on. Useless the flowers that you give, we give after the soul is gone. Galatians 6, verse 9 and 10 says, and let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we therefore have opportunity, let us do good, encourage all men, especially unto them that are the household of faith. And then I don't know how Brian did it. I guess the Spirit must have done it. But you know that verse, the song we sang just before the message? Channels only, blessed Master, but with all thy wondrous power, flowing through us, thou canst use us every day and every hour. Let's kneel for prayer.